Hello, I'm Katie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're all booked.
Welcome back to another episode of Sterling Municipal Library's podcast, where we talk to you about books we'd like to recommend.
And Sam is joining us today to talk about a book named Severance,
written by Ling Ma.
Which, the name sounds familiar. Where might people have heard of her before?
She's written for, she's writing for Playboy. She used to, which is actually a big part of the book being made. And she's writing for the Chicago Reader, Vox, Vice.
Oh, okay.
So, she writes all over.
Yeah.
This is her only full-length book. Everything else is more articles or short stories.
Okay.
Well, tell us about the book.
Well, the book takes off. It follows the life of Candace Chin, who is the, the protagonist of the book, as she alternates between growing up as an immigrant in America, or I guess as a child of immigrants. She moved here. She technically was, but she was young and had very small recollections of back home in China. So she was dealing with that kind of, push and pull from having an old world family and her being American. And then everything just sort of falls apart with society, like a sickness goes around. You could compare it to being a zombie, but no one eats anybody. No one chases anybody. Everyone just kind of gets locked into doing their routine.
Whatever they
did in life, they just keep doing it over and over until they eventually die.
So it's almost like pervasive middle age.
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing they push is that, how locked in everyone is and like their routines and their circles and how people spend more time looking back in nostalgia and things. And that tends to look like the reason things happen. The more nostalgic, the more you have more connections, you kind of get locked in this little loop.
Do they take care of themselves when they're locked in that loop?
No, they just do. It's a complete feedback loop.
Okay.
They just keep going in that circle until they eventually die.
So they starve to death, basically, get dehydrated?
Until the fever comes and then they die, which I'm guessing, because some of the times they're later in their decay, so I'm guessing they may be able to go a little longer than they would normally, because some of the points are a month out.
Okay.
And people are still doing the same thing, but then there are ones where she runs into who are falling apart and dying. And
now, when we're talking about like a loop, are they doing one specific thing over and over again, or is it like a few actions in a row?
Well, like one of the earlier ones that they talk about is they go to this house and she sets the table. The family like pantomimes eating. She picks up all the dishes and then puts them all back.
Okay.
And everybody pantomimes eating and then she picks them all back up.
That sounds like the dinner party from hell.
Yeah, but
I just wanted to make sure they weren't just like pressing a button over and over again. Like it's kind of a complicated task, but something that is every day.
She goes by a store. It's really well kept put together because the lady who worked there and reset everything, that was where she got stuck or what her thing
was. So she's still fixing.
So she was just constantly going and rearranging everything in the store and making sure. So even when looters were coming through, she would go in
and fix the store.
Fix everything back the way it was. And that's just what she did.
That sounds like a pretty complicated task, though.
Yeah.
I kept laughing because it all takes place in New York. And then they travel out. There's this Talking Heads song, Heaven, where it's always talking about they have the same night. They go to the same bar and everything. Like this really wonderful night. And it keeps repeating.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just popped to me because, again, they were a newer band. So it always comes back to one person's view of heaven could be terrible.
Yeah.
I'm doing the same thing over and over and over and over again.
So what was the mode of transmission for this disease? Is it airborne? Is it? Okay.
Yeah, it started out, and that was kind of the big thing. That's where people say the book is set, or like an attack on like late stage capitalism, which I mean, it kind of is. But the problem is, rather than take the time, she works for a book publishing company, which she makes sure like the actual physical paper book appears. So she works in Bibles. But the point is, they're trying to push things out, and people are getting sick in China, and it's not, hey, we should stop while these people are sick. It's like, well, who will do it? We have this edition of the Bible we want out by Christmas because it comes with this, this, and this, and you need to make it happen. No actual care about the people
trying
to prevent the transmission of disease. It's like, make this happen now.
Yeah.
And so it does show that that's how it spreads because nobody's taking the time.
From Bibles.
Right. Or just anything.
Yes.
Yeah. People are constantly going over to oversee the factories in China and go do all this international travel, and no one's taking the time. One of the punchlines with the book is she actually is emailing them in the throes of all these people dying. It was like, hey, we need to get this printed. Can you do a second printing of this?
Oh my gosh.
And they're like, yeah,
they're really flying off the shelf, these Bibles.
Things are really bad over here in China. Yeah, but we've worked together before. It's just we're not taking new jobs. Like, oh, we're just wanting to do a reprint. Is that fine? And people are like, no.
No, it's not fine.
Wow.
Everyone's dying.
You should go home to your family. So it's
now. Does it start in China, and or is it kind of global at that point?
It starts and then it progressively goes until it spreads throughout the world.
So when she's emailing people, she's not like surrounded by dying people.
Yeah, no,
she is, and she's still like she's stuck in her own loop.
Well, no, and that's what the thing is. I think one of the things that stands out about her character is her parents had both died. She really had traveled. She was born in China, lived in Utah, moved here, moved there, always kind of bounced around.
Mm-hmm.
And really seemed kind of rudderless for the most part. Like, there was one point where when her parents died, she had money because her father was a professor and all this when he came.
Oh, yes, the rich professors.
So she just kind of, you know, took like a year or two off and just like hung around, did like the social scene, just sat at cafes after college, you know, and just drank coffee. And then, you know, as the day went on, alcohol level and everything she drank popped up until she went home and hooked up with somebody, passed out, and there was like,
start the loop.
Yeah, and it was just, and then she was moved into her career, and it just kind of, but there was nothing, she really had no nostalgia in her life. I think that was kind of what was pushing that, the reason she kept maintaining, I guess, her mental health and all of this is the fact that she had nothing to attach to.
Yeah.
She had no real thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it did point out the fact that throughout all of this, and again, this isn't stuff that's like, oh, you've run the plot for me. She does, like, go to work. And that's what she does. It's kind of funny. But again, I can relate to it. As the world's falling apart around her, she goes to work. And she's still showing up. And I mean, even after everyone's left.
Yeah.
Even after, like, the managers and stuff have left.
I feel like she's in a loop. Like, at the end, they should reveal, like, oh, she's in her own loop.
And, you know, that doesn't happen. If you're looking for a very fulfilling ending, this book doesn't have it.
Oh, good.
It doesn't. But I will run that for you. She does not end up in the loop.
Dang it, because it sounds like she is.
But when you're looking for like a very good ending, you're like, oh, okay, it's over. But I think it follows her writing style and the story of how kind of the reason that she really has no purpose as a person prevents her from falling into, you know, just falling into the fever.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but it is bacterial. I mean, they do say that. It's not like something where it just happens where people mentally break.
Yeah.
I think it's a bacteria that makes you more susceptible to, you know, like giving.
Getting in. Stuck in these like obsessive like
compulsions. Yeah. Maybe, you know, to be really nerd out. It reminded me of like the end of, what's it, Neon Genesis Evangelion anime, where like everyone kind of gives in and they just become part of the all.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. It's very much like this thing comes to you and you just kind of.
Okay.
But I think it points to how people, most people just get up, go to work, do their thing, kind of unhappy, do what they expected of them, and then just move on. And this illness just kind of, I don't know, maybe it's the one thing that makes them happy. Maybe they really take pride in arranging all the clothes. Maybe the people really take pride in providing dinner. So it's the one thing that brings them joy, and they just keep doing it until they eventually die.
Ooh,
that sounds like hedonism.
Well, except no one's doing anything that's like hedonistic.
I know,
like,
that's what's really depressing.
Arranging.
Maybe I was wrong earlier. Maybe it is their heaven. They're like, this is great, you know. You can't really judge what brings other people joy.
Yeah.
You know, we have people who come in here and, you know, check out 20 books. Like, I'm going to sit at home, read 20 books. And for some people, that sounds amazing. You know,
and for some people, that sounds like
absolutely amazing. But then for other people, like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to
20 in a row?
I was like, I want to go hiking this weekend. Someone's like, this is terrible. But if you're really into that, there could be some person with a fever hiking the same trail all day, every day.
They're going to die real quick.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, until a bobcat figures out it's an easy meal and we're done.
Yeah, bobcat's like, that's the third time that human has walked past here.
And I paid attention.
So does the book address what happens to the animals? Can it cross-contaminate species?
No, they actually, I want to say I'm pretty positive that they bring up the fact that animals aren't affected the same. Because I want to say they bring up stuff around the park and there are animals running around, like, because the horses are loose, you know, the ones that bring carriages through New York.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of cool, as, you know, the imagery of bringing up how, you know, the metropolis and how, like, Times Square empties out and there's no one there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny that still vendors keep showing up and people are working there. And then they have security protecting, like, you know, all the big museums and everything, even as it's all falling apart.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was saying. I feel like it sounds like there will be like random places that remain like in decent condition because one person just like is like, that's my job. Go yeah, take care of that building.
And it's, you know, you wouldn't doubt that. And what's funny is people start leaving the cities. They're like, oh, I'm going back to family. Again, I'm not, I have friends who live in New York. And I was looking through Goodreads, and everyone I know who lives in New York is like, five stars across the board. You know, this is great. Where I was like, you know, you kind of get tired of the how New York's amazing narrative. You only write so many love tales about one city.
A city filled with trash.
But it made sense that, you know, trash people. It gave a good way of laying out. I mean, that's where she went to college and everything. Mm-hmm. So it laid out how it just progressively fell apart. And even this place where everyone's at and all this amazing stuff left.
I mean, it also feels like New York is the perfect place to do something where people get stuck in their own, like, daily lives without paying attention to anything else, because I feel like that's very New York, like, yeah. Being the only person in the city, even though there are millions of people in the city.
At first thought, you'd think it's silly that they're going through and they're doing the same thing every day. They're still going to work, still working in their offices. But, you know, when you're in the city, you got nothing to do. It's like, I can sit in my apartment all day.
Mm-hmm. Can't afford to go out. Right, it's too expensive.
This last bit of normalcy, and I can go out. And that's what's funny, too. They're going out just, you know, whatever. I'll pull money out of the ATM and pay this guy $100 for hot dog. What does it matter? You know, it's not really ever going to matter anymore, this money. But people are still like, give me this much. Or, you know, I'll give you a cab ride to Brooklyn, but it's this much money. And it's just like,
okay, sure, money doesn't matter, but whatever.
Here, you can have my credit card and see how that goes. But people were still tied onto that. I think that was the big thing, and I really felt that was where it got the most realism, that even as things fall apart, people are going to hold on to as much normalcy as possible. Mm-hmm. And you see that during, like, hurricanes and things here. People still try to do things like, oh, I just want to go back to work. You know, I just want to get back to where everything's how it was. Something where I can hold on to.
Well, what kind of person would you recommend this book for? It does seem like a little highbrow for an average end of the world novel.
It does. I don't think it's a very good, like I said, it wouldn't be for someone who's like, oh, I want this apocalyptic novel.
I want guns.
Action. It's way more grounded in her past, like her parent, their transition from China to the U.S. It goes pretty heavily in depth in the how her father really wanted to come to the U.S. Her mom was just kind of like, great, we're here, when do we go back home? And he was always like, no. But her mom got really, and I guess that's kind of the late stage capitalism thing that kept popping up in all the reviews and stuff, is that the where her mother found joy was in, like, beauty regimens and buying things.
Yeah.
And that was where everyone kind of found their, like, oh, okay, I'm going to go shopping because I don't really, don't feel any joy about anything right now. I want to go back to China and I can't, and I'm just going to go buy stuff and get a car and drive fast to the mountains. And
I mean, who hasn't went on Amazon when they feel sad and bought themselves something?
Right. No, it was a really fun book. I enjoyed it. I think anyone who's just, you know, if you're into more personal tales, I mean, it does have that, you know, I guess apocalypse thing, but it doesn't really come down to the fact where it happens so progressively.
Yeah.
You as a reader almost, like, zone out on it.
Like, you get used to it. You're like, oh, yeah, everyone just walks in circles. That's normal.
Yeah, this person leaves. But, I mean, you don't see them a lot. Like, they're holed up. You know, I mean, if someone's doing a dinner thing in their house, they're not out in the street like, bruh. You know, they're just, you don't see them. They're there.
Yeah.
And when they keep catching people, it's because one of them will say they keep watering their plants over and over and over and over again until eventually water starts coming out from under their door.
Mm.
So it's like you call the super and they come. It's like, okay, well, she's been watering her plants for 3 days straight. And, you know, it's things like that.
They're all dead.
And at no point do they attack anybody. They don't do, because they go through. And that was the thing that reminded me of Station 11. The group, she ends up getting with a group who leaves New York, which sounds like it'd be a really big part of the plot, but it really felt like a minuscule, like, yeah, okay, she's with the group and they win.
They're gone now. No.
But the punchline is, and it goes back to, I think she said she had watched a bunch of George Romero movies. So they end up, you know, going to a facility and things like that. I can't tell you what it is, that would run everything.
Okay.
But, so one of the guys she meets up with, she goes, and he has a facility that he was an investor in that, you know, had everything they would need to survive and make it through the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Entertainment, food, clothing.
Yeah, the top three.
So they end up trying to go from New York to Chicago. And again, that is probably 20% of the book, because it happens throughout. Like, it's interspersed, but then something will happen and she'll go back and explain, like, why she felt this way, how this went, and stuff like that. And then, you know, it's almost like this episode. You had to put up with the idiot IT guy leading you to the journey. So, you know, it's just like this podcast right now.
No, you are not an idiot IT guy.
If you like dry humor, it's great. I mean, it's very, some of it, I thought it was great. It felt like sitting down and talking to someone about their life. It had a very conversational feel.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't some people describe it as, like, satire?
Yeah, some people describe it as satire, which I guess you get. I can get because
like zombie apocalypse stuff, satire, or
it is satire. No, just like of how the business world works. Like they, you know, all the as it started going down, all the upper management, CEO, they all bailed, and they just offered big bonuses to all the grunts that stayed behind and kept everything running while they ran away to
spend their private time island or whatever
before they died.
I mean, that feels. I guess it depends on how you're looking at satirical. It does feel like a little bit like a poke at like management, but more like a this is what really happens though. This isn't a joke. Yeah. Like this is just how it is.
And more like everyone has that price, you know. So like I can't not do this. It's this much money. And like she kept saying, I have no family to go to.
Yeah, what am I supposed to do instead of going to my job?
Hang out in my apartment and watch Netflix till the internet dies, you know? It's like, no, I'll go to work, and eventually all this big amount of money will show up in my account. So it's great.
Wow.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and get to our game show portion, and we'll play, I don't know, repetitive music.
Okay.
How exciting.
Just like do-do-do-do-do-do. Find some video game music here.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, and now we're going to go ahead and ask some rapid-fire questions. Leslie, start us off.
Could you please describe the cover of the book?
The cover of the book is just like an inner office envelope, and it just has a very boring, like the white label you put, address label you put on it, and it just says Severance by Ling Ma, which is fitting because it's the book was started writing it while she worked as a fact-checker for Playboy, and then when she got laid off, went from a short story, started making it a novel while she was living off of her severance pay.
Interesting.
So there's like, you know, a good double-ended joke there.
What is a major flaw that the main character has?
She's kind of boring. I mean, I don't mean that necessarily in a bad, but it's that kind of, I don't know, she just seems ill-prepared with things. Like one of the things that kept sticking out to me is she was in love with her boyfriend she met and all this, but she had a very clunky, very almost like, while describing like, you know, sorry, describing like sexual relations things, she had very clunky, very like almost repulsive ways of describing him. But it was like, it was great. But, you know, it was like insert terrible thing that if you visualize in your mind is totally disgusting. Cool. And it made it even bigger punchline. She used to work for Playboy and that's how she did it. But I think it laid out how her character had all these, I don't know, odd ways of being withdrawn from the world. So yeah, she's spent more time with herself and was kind of, you know, drab.
What kind of food would you pair with this book?
Dumplings.
Okay. Oh, delicious. Do the characters have the power to change their world?
No.
I figured that would be the answer, but I just wanted to make sure that there was nothing else hiding in the book.
They have a way to make a brand new world now.
Do 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 do.
Isn't that the Little Mermaid?
Which character did you understand the least?
I guess Jonathan. So the one character that I really had a hard time relating to, in some ways I could, but mostly I couldn't, was her boyfriend Jonathan, who was very much like, I'm going off the grid, I'm not going to do anything. And he just kind of did scant jobs here and there to make pay rent, but he really just didn't do anything.
Okay.
And it was basically, and she even pointed out that he used like his anti-authoritarian life as just a way to be lazy.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, he's not really doing anything. It's just like, I'm living off the grid while doing their stuff, but I'm just going to sit here and watch movies all day. And it was kind of like, okay. But, you know, can't help who you love sometimes.
Fair enough.
Okay, so now we're going to head and do a random excerpt from the book. Here you go. Ooh, good roll.
Me. Nothing weighed on me. Nothing unique.
Interesting. I guess that is the main character.
Yeah.
Yes.
It sounds like that the main character.
There's a Candace quote. Yeah.
Candace quote.
It's the book because it's all written from first person.
So. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And stay tuned next week for another fantastic book recommendation.
Goodbye.
Bye.